Great. So I'd just like to thank Upendra for organizing this and the invitation to speak. That's great. And David for getting a big crowd in here for me. So I shortened the title and made it a little bit more provocative. So hopefully we'll answer the question. I'd like to mention that Will Osterholz, a PhD student working with us, has got a poster this afternoon that digs a little bit deeper into nitrogen retention in high diversity, low input agricultural systems. I've got to apologize. I've got pounds per acre and kilograms per hectare back and forth. Kilograms per hectare is about 12% greater than pounds of nitrogen per acre. So just keep that in mind. My apologies. So crop system diversity related to nitrogen retention. This is crop system diversity in Iowa, right? Corn and soybeans. Yellow is corn, the green is soybeans. So nevertheless, though, don't let it fool you. There's a gradient of crop system diversity out there, and you can see it in the map if you look closely. There's corn-soybean rotation on the right here. See the extra green in there? People are doing more corn-soybean rotation than they are on the left side where there's more yellow. That's more continuous corn. And so these fit my model, right? So continuous corn, high input, as low diversity as you can get, and corn-soybean rotation, a little bit lower input and a little bit more diversity. Both ultimately really high input, low diversity systems though. So I'm going to compare nitrogen retention in these two systems, and then we'll think about systems with three and four crops in rotation and think about how nitrogen conservation might change a little bit if we added things like small grains and alfalfa back to this map. They're on there in pink and purple, but notice you can't point them out. At least I couldn't. So if we're going to think about nitrogen conservation, the first thing we got to do is get a good idea of a nitrogen budget in our head, and David did a great job of introducing this. Right, nitrogen follows the conservation of mass. Inputs minus outputs have got to equal change in soil storage, given that our crop systems are annuals, largely, with the exception of a year or two of alfalfa in some cases. So this budget here is from the perspective of a discrete isotopically labeled nitrogen fertilizer addition to corn following soybeans in a Midwest agricultural system. So you put about 150 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare in, and roughly a third of that will end up in the crop, and you harvest about 120 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. The crop may have taken up 200 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. So the big take-home point from this slide is that typically the soil is the largest direct source for crop nitrogen uptake and the largest direct sink for nitrogen fertilizer immobilization, right, in the system. So you get different results with the fertilizer difference method, but that, of course, includes the immobilization mineralization dynamics. So let's move on to following the conservation of mass, inputs minus outputs equal change in soil storage. Let's think about continuous corn and corn-soybean systems a little bit more closely. So continuous corn, this is just an estimation of inputs and outputs from a literature review. So on the left, you've got inputs, total about 207 pounds an acre, or the units on this slide. Outputs, about 137. So we've estimated as many as we could down to the corn grain that gets put into the field. You'll notice it's positive 69 pounds per acre. So that indicates that this system's got a positive balance, right? Even if we grossly underestimated nitrate leaching, which we probably didn't because we have a lot of good data on those in Iowa because our fields are artificially drained, it's pretty safe to say it's a positive balance. Corn and soybeans, on the other hand, it's a lot different from continuous corn trying to do this type of thing with the system for a couple of reasons. Well, first, you get a negative balance. On the average, it's about negative 20 pounds an acre using this rough estimation method. The big problem, though, is that I got a question mark there on biological nitrogen fixation. Unlike corn, where we can accurately measure the major inputs and outputs, fertilizer and grain, the third or fourth largest input in this, or flux in this system, we can't get a good measure of, and there's a lot of evidence to suggest that it varies greatly in time and space. And so that makes understanding the nitrogen conservation in the system quite a bit more difficult. So an alternative approach to this, of course, is to measure the change in stock over time, right? We can measure the change in the total amount of nitrogen in the system over time is a good indication of retention in the system. So we did that here at three sites across Iowa, kind of spanning the climatic gradient of Iowa from cold and dry in the northwest to warm and wet in the southeast. So these three sites have got long-term continuous corn and corn-soybean systems at each site. Each site, the corn phase, receives 5 to 7 nitrogen fertilizer rates. And the reason for this is to empirically identify the agronomic optimum nitrogen rate that David talked about in the previous presentation. So using those data, the rates predicted, and the statistical models put up on the web down there, and this is the way that most Midwest land-grant universities recommend nitrogen fertilizer rates. And basically, here's the model, just in a nutshell. You've got dollars per acre for fertilizer use in the bottom, increases linearly. You don't get a discount for buying in bulk, essentially, that's saying. You've got your yield. You could think of that as bushels per acre or dollars per acre in the green line. That would be like Kentucky, not Iowa, right, if it's bushels per acre. And as a result, because your yield plateaus, your gross profits, your net profits decline at some point where your next unit of fertilizer purchase doesn't pay for itself in an increase in grain, right? So that's kind of how these sites work and what they were developed for. So in 1999 and 2009, we took soil samples from the top 6 inches or 15 centimeters of all the plots in these sites, and we measured the change in total soil nitrogen between those two times. And I'm going to show you some of those results here. So we're going to go through three of these slides here, and so I want to talk about this one pretty slowly here. So on the left, we've got change in soil organic carbon. On the right, change in soil nitrogen. These two things change in unison, so you can't retain nitrogen in the system if you're not retaining carbon, and I'll get back to that point in a second. The black circles are they're continuous corn. The open circles are corn-soybean rotation. You've got nitrogen fertilizer input on the bottom from 0 to 270 kilograms per hectare or 240 pounds per acre, whatever you choose. And then the change in pounds of nitrogen and carbon per acre on the y-axis. So the green line is the economic optimum nitrogen rate for continuous corn. The red line is the economic optimum nitrogen rate for corn-soybean rotation. So these are the empirically determined optimum rates from that 1999 to 2009 period that our soil samples represented, right? And you can see these dotted lines in the background. They represent what you would pull off the statistical model, the nitrogen rate calculator on the web. So basically what we're suggesting or recommending that people might apply. Continuous corn always gets more nitrogen fertilizer than corn soybean, right? So the dotted line on the right here is the recommendation for continuous corn, and the one to the left of that would be the statistical model's recommendation for corn following soybean. What you notice here is that this site's a little bit unusual in that the actual economic optimum rates are so close for corn, soybean, and continuous corn. But what's common at this site and all the other sites I'll show you today is that corn, soybean have a negative nitrogen and carbon balance over time, and continuous corn have a positive or insignificantly different from zero carbon and nitrogen balance over time. So that's northwest Iowa. Here's central Iowa, right where Iowa State University is. Again, you can see these rates are actually happen to be very close to the statistical model, so you would have made a lot of money, I guess, from that 1999 to 2009 period. But again, continuous corn positive, corn soybean statistically negative for carbon, neutral for nitrogen. And then southeast Iowa. So this site's a real interesting one because it kind of fits the pattern and it doesn't. So you'll notice that I've got a green line on there for the actual optimum nitrogen rate, but that's not really the actual optimum nitrogen rate. For that 99 to 09 period, it fell above 270 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. Would have been the optimum nitrogen rate for that continuous corn system. So we really didn't even have a value for this site. But at that 270 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare, the change in carbon was positive in continuous corn, and it was neutral for nitrogen. So that's a lot of nitrogen to get that nitrogen conservation in the system, and I'll come back to that. Before I get to that, go back to that, I want to highlight here again that those differences are due largely to the greater residue inputs in continuous corn versus corn-soybean rotation. So these systems are fall-tilled, and all the residue is left in the system. And as evidence of that, you can see that the carbon-to-nitrogen ratio at these three sites is totally independent of nitrogen fertilizer rate. So you're not storing extra inorganic nitrogen by putting more into the system. You're storing more in continuous corn because there's more residue production, there's more carbon available to hold that nitrogen in the soil organic matter. So continuous corn positive nitrogen and soil organic matter balances, corn soybean negative, but they're trade-offs, right? And that's the continuous corn bleeds nitrogen to the environment. Here's a figure showing nitrogen fertilizer input versus drainage nitrogen concentration in Iowa. So these are sites with tile drains underneath them, and we're measuring the nitrate concentration and load. And we've compared continuous corn and corn soybean systems. This is largely Matt Helmer's work at Iowa State University. They find no difference between the amount in continuous corn. So there's no rotation effect continuous corn versus corn soybean. What the big driver is nitrogen fertilizer rate. There's also no difference in load between the corn phase and the soybean phase of a corn-soybean rotation, which is a little bit surprising, but that's the way it's been over decades of site years of data. So as I mentioned earlier, continuous corn always gets a higher nitrogen input than corn-soybean, and you see that show up here. So I've got those two rates. Those would be what you would get off the statistical calculator. If you were a farmer, that's what you might put in your field. And so you've got a 22% reduction in nitrate-nitrogen concentration from continuous corn to corn-soybean just based on that lower nitrogen fertilizer rate that system requires. Nitrous oxide, a similar story. I don't have data here for continuous corn, but what you're looking at is just a corn-soybean rotation. I think these data can effectively make the point that continuous corn emits more nitrous oxide than corn-soybean. That's kind of a no-brainer. But the data here, I think, build on that, and they're a little bit interesting because what you see here is on the x-axis, on the left panel, we got corn phase and 0, 120, and 200 pounds an acre of nitrogen to that corn. And on the right, we have a soybean phase. Both corn-soybean rotation, just the same phase in the same year. They're right next to one another. And the soybean doesn't receive any nitrogen fertilizer. It just gets... it's just the x-axis there represents the plots that the soybean are being, I'm not doing a good job of describing this. Those are the plots that were fertilized with those levels in corn the previous year. No fertilizer to soybean, but that's the amount they got in the previous year in corn. So what's really interesting here is that the soybean, no matter how much fertilizer you put on it in the corn year, even though 200 was far in excess of the actual agronomic optimum rate, the nitrous oxide emissions in that soybean phase were all very similar to putting no fertilizer on corn, except in one year in 2013 following a major drought in 2012, where it appears that there was some nitrogen carryover in that soil profile at the very excessive rate, 200 pounds an acre, that produced significantly higher nitrous oxide emissions from that one plot. So, more nitrous oxide emissions, more nitrate leaching from that continuous corn versus corn-soybean. So now I'd like to move on to some real crop system diversity here, not just continuous corn and corn-soybean rotation. This is the Marsden Farm Experiment, Matt Liebman's experiment at Iowa State University. It compares corn-soybean, or maize-soybean as indicated there, maize-soybean small grain, and maize-soybean small grain underseeded with alfalfa, and then a fourth year of alfalfa, so a two, a three, and a four-year rotation. These rotations are managed the way that a farmer would manage them. So when the two-year gets synthetic nitrogen, three- and four-year get manure, mostly. Some synthetic nitrogen in some years. So we've been developing a new conceptual model for nitrogen conservation in these extended rotations. And so our model here that we've been testing at Marsden Farm and elsewhere in the Midwest, it takes the focus off of optimizing that inorganic nitrogen pool, optimizing it in time and space, the 4R strategy, and it shifts it to managing the fluxes of inorganic nitrogen within the system. So a major assumption of this is that plants can compete effectively with microbes for those large fluxes of nitrogen moving through the system. But essentially, so we predict these smaller pool sizes of inorganic nitrogen, but larger fluxes. So integrated over time, the amount of inorganic nitrogen availability is greater in that system. And so we've done some preliminary tests of this model here at Marsden Farm. So as you can see, synthetic nitrogen plus manure nitrogen inputs far greater in the two-year system. This doesn't include the extra fixation that would be in the 3 and 4 year systems due to legumes. But here's kind of the meat of the evaluation of our model. So here's the nitrate pool size in the rotations in the late spring when we expect those high leaching amounts. And so over time, over the 12 years of this study, it's significantly higher in the 2 versus 3 and 4 year rotations. But the gross nitrogen mineralization rates, so that's just a gross amount of production, this is not a net rate, is higher as you go from the 2 to the 3 to the 4 year rotation. Accompanying that, lysimeter nitrate concentrations, we don't have loads, but they're lower in the 3 and 4 year rotation under corn. And then the maize grain yield is significantly higher in the 3 and 4 year systems. So we think this is a conceptual model that we've been evaluating for nitrogen cycling and nitrogen conservation in these extended crop rotations that we look forward to testing further. And Will Osterholz has some information on. And so is soil nitrogen conservation, is diversity always good? I think it depends on what your perspective of diversity is. And with that, we have a second for a question. I'd be happy to take one.
Yes, we have the time for all questions.
So in your one system with corn, your first one, you looked at what's your nitrogen timing, and is it like one time or split?
Yeah.
How do you get it compared? Is it more?
So, no, it's a one-time application. All those long-term sites that go into the nitrogen rate calculator, it's all side-dressed, though. It's all side-dressed UAN, probably around V4.
One question.
Just clarification. Nice work. When you compared carbon in those long-term experiments, it seems it was 6 inches only.
Yeah.
And I noticed John Baker was here earlier, but did you sample deeper and we get the same story?
Yeah, Ken, that's a great question. So the management is exactly the same over time. It's not. I don't think it fits that till-no-till management shift. And so what we did to back up those data is we're going to try and get them through the publication process and avoid that question from the start, is we did a meta-analysis of long-term carbon change across the Midwest that have looked at shallow and deep profiles in the same study, and there's a very tight one-to-one correlation within management systems. So I think within the management system, we're okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.